Welcome to Podness, the Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 219. Should IT be governed? I'm your host, Jeff Hallich. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. Call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. Let me introduce the co-hosts. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
Pleasure to be here. Better than I deserve.
Awesome, man. And also Brad Torrey from TTCS Computer Services. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm good. I don't have a catchphrase, though.
It's all good, man.
That'll be your catchphrase.
I was just thinking about that.
There you go. I don't have my catchphrase. I don't have a catchphrase. Okay, so John, why don't you go ahead and start off with a tip or story?
I got a quick tip this week. I seem to run in this quite a bit. Got a lot of customers ask me about video surveillance, which I do not do. I usually turn that over if they want a large system. I don't manage the DVRs. I don't like to do that. I have a security company that I deal with here locally in town that does most of that. But customer just needs a few cameras. The best solution I've found is a company called YCam. I don't know if anybody's heard of that. You can get their products on Amazon. They're pretty affordable. But the great thing about YCam is it's all cloud-based, so you don't have to have an on-site DVR. So this is, you do need some bandwidth, though, so you'd want a cable connection or something like that. But really, the claim to fame of YCam is they have 7 days of free storage. So if you set the cameras to do motion recording and all that kind of stuff, there's no monthly fee. You buy the cameras and you can have 7 days of history. So that's kind of a nice tip, and which you don't get from like the Nest cams and other solutions. You have to pay a monthly right away to get your recording history. Okay. So I've had good luck with those when I just put in like maybe one, two, maybe three cameras. They just want to watch a particular door or watch a certain area or something like that. So YCam, I'll put it up. Y-cam.com.
Now, John, is that something that's very easy to install?
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. It's pretty much plug and play.
Okay.
And they have indoor and outdoor cameras. They've got cameras that run on PoE, power over Ethernet. So they've got a nice little setup. I just saw they introduced a security system. I don't know anything about that, so I'm not, you know, throwing that out there. But I just saw they came up with that. And they've been around since 2007. So I think their business model is probably pretty much proven out.
Okay.
There is a paid service for the cameras, which does get you some more features. And I think it's 30, 60, 90 days, or maybe unlimited recording, whatever you need there. But it's easy. It's simple. It's been reliable. It's got all the features of most of the other systems I've seen as far as motion detection, night vision, if you want it, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. Very good. All right, Brad, what about you?
All right. Well, I was listening to the show last night from last week. And you guys were talking about health, and so throw two things out there. One, I haven't had to go to the doctor for an illness in almost 10 years, because the last time I went to the doctor, I had walking pneumonia, and he gave me the brand is Neelmed. But it's one of those sinus flushing setups.
Oh, yeah.
You create a saline solution to clean that out. 100%. Every time if I get a cold, I do that a couple times a day. And I'm done in like 1 or 24-hour period usually. So
what's that called?
Neelmed. Neelmed.
Nice.
And it's the strangest sensation in the world. You're literally like doing what you have try to train your nose not to do for your entire life is get water to flush through it. But it cleans stuff out. It gets rid of, you know, allergens and gets rid of coughs, which seems counterintuitive because it's in your nose. But I haven't had to be on antibiotics in like 10 years.
Nice. Very good. Good to hear.
So I've converted all my kids. They're all on it too. Every time they get sick, they're in there taking care of it. So. If you listen to Security Now, you already know this, but just a note to people, there are a lot of Netgear routers that have a vulnerability that you need to, at the very least, update your firmware, but you should look into that, where you can just send an HTML request or an HTTP request to the router, and it will provide you feedback immediately with the admin credentials. You don't have to be authenticated or logged in. You just send it a URL, and it will conveniently provide you with the admin credentials, so you can log into the router at that point. And if you have website administration turned on, that can happen from anywhere in the world. They can just hit your router and get your admin credentials. So you might want to fix that or get rid of your Netgear routers. I don't know if the... I know a lot of like some ISPs are use Netgear routers as their provided equipment. I don't know if those are affected or not, because I don't have any Netgear routers anywhere in my life. But if you have any, you should probably check into that.
Now, is that
looks
all
like
of them?
The R series. Okay. Looks like the R series. R6250, 6400, 6700, 7000 series. Just from what I'm Googling here, trying to put some links in the show notes, but yes.
Hey, John, yeah. So when you're talking to a customer and you ask them, what's the model number of the router, what type of answer do you think you're going to get?
Well, I manage my customers, Jeff, so I know the models, but yes, I'm with you.
Yeah. I'm thinking more from the residential side. Go, what model number is that? I don't know. It's blue.
No. That's definitely wrong, Jeff. The first question you're going to get back is, what's a router?
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then a couple of things fun with phones. My daughter's really, really into the Note, and she needed a new one, and you know, the whole Note 7 discontinuation made the Note 5 supply kind of hard to get a hold of, so, or at least affordably. So we got her a Note 5 that was like an open box, not used, not new, not refurbished, but you know, not retail packaging. And it came, booted up fine, and then the next time she logged in, the screen was locked. FRP is the what does it stand for? Firmware. I think it's firmware reboot protection. So if you have a signed in Android phone of the latest, I think it started with M, Marshmallow, then if it's signed into a Google account and then you do a firmware refresh, you have to sign in with that same account again, or else the phone will lock it down.
Oh.
So that's a theft prevention.
Okay.
Device
factory reset
system.
Protection. Factory reset protection.
So good to know, by the way, if you're going to sell or hand off your phone, you know, hand-me-downs or whatever you're going to do, if you have a recent Android phone, make sure that you turn off FRP before you wipe your phone, before you give it to somebody else, because otherwise they won't be able to use it. And it's a pain to clear it. If it gets, so somewhere along the line, this phone had got a different firmware flash to it, or it was out of sync with whatever, I don't know, but it wouldn't even boot into Android to give me the option to sign in. It was completely locked on, you know, the black screen, and it looked like, you know, command line. So I had to do all kinds of things to try to like refresh the firmware and get into, I don't even remember everything I did. I was doing so many things, but I know a lot about getting into an Android phone now.
Now, what finally worked to get you in there?
I had to, so there's like, Odin is a program, mm-hmm, that is basically, you know, if you don't know, and I didn't until now, Samsung has a factory provided system for accessing their phone's firmwares that they only provide to certified Samsung refurbishers or technicians and their own, you know, internal. And then there's a leaked version that works just as well. So Odin is a program you can download. And then you have to find the matching firmware for your model, and it has to match exactly. And then of that, there's all the versions, depending on how many updates there have been for that model. And I had to try all of them until one of them took. And then finally it accepted the firmware. And then I don't even remember what I did. There was a hack to release it. So,
okay.
It involved like tapping at the, there was another program that I followed a guide. I might be able to look it up on here, but you can send actual commands to the phone through the USB with this other program that like forced it to make a phone call. And in the middle of the phone call, you have to hit real fast so that you can get into the settings. And then in the settings, you can disable FRP. but like you're basically like bypassing the whole system.
Wow.
And then that doesn't work on the newer firmwares because Samsung doesn't want you to do that. So that hack doesn't work. You have to like go anyway. It was such a mess. I've done it. It was hours.
Oh, hours you'll never get back.
No, I won't. But my daughter's happy and she has a phone and it works. And then the other fun thing with phones is I have a new OnePlus One 3T and it is awesome. So if anyone's looking for a really, really high spec phone that they'll be happy using, even as a, you know, I use my phone for remote desktop support and all kinds of things. It's a little over $400. You got to wait a couple weeks because you have to order it direct from the company if you want the newest model. But it's a great phone. Good battery life, good performance. It's awesome. It has all the bells and whistles, but it's a lot cheaper.
Rafa, what are they saying about updates for that thing?
I don't listen to them because their PR is so terrible.
Okay.
It's on Nougat now. So
that's probably the only reason I haven't pulled the trigger on that, because I love that phone too. But I'm worried about security updates and all that just because of the dumb compliance stuff I need to do. My medical compliance.
Well, I had a OnePlus One for a couple years, and it continued to receive updates well into like past when I expected it to.
Cool.
It was still basically, as far as security patches, it was current when I retired it a month ago, as far as I know.
Okay. Interesting.
They've got a pretty good track record with that, I would say.
Now, when you say good battery life, what are we talking?
Well, if I use it normally, I can get through a day.
Okay.
If I'm conservative with it, it'll go probably a day and a half. And if I'm heavy, I probably need to top it off, but it charges super fast. Okay. So like I can plug it in. If I'm driving for 10 minutes, I'll plug it into my car while I'm driving and pick up another 10%. So like yesterday I was out working, I don't know, until like 7 PM and my phone never dipped below 70%.
Nice.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's like, it's not as good. The OnePlus One had a lower res screen, not quite as bright of a screen. So it literally, when it was new, it would get a little over 2 days.
Okay.
Not the OnePlus 3T is not quite as long, but it's still, because of the charging speed, if you plug it into the dash charger they provide, it'll get a full charge in like 20 minutes. Like it's crazy.
Okay. I love the fast charging. I've got the Samsung S7 Edge in. It's a night and day difference, but the problem is you have to have the fast charging plug and all that kind of stuff. So I've only got one.
Is it pretty stock, Bradford?
Yeah, it feels like, because I've been using, you know, either since my first Galaxy phone, I've been using Nova Launcher or one of those kind of things. So I'm always kind of used to more of a stock Android experience. And out of the box, I didn't even really mod much with it. I'm still using the launcher that came with the firmware. I haven't really done anything except lay my screen out the way I like to and run and go. And it's one thing that's kind of weird, but I'm growing to love it, is the switch on the side. There's a physical switch for changing profiles. So silent mode,
really?
Switch it down to priority mode, switch it to normal mode. Like, so you don't even have to wake your screen up to just walk into a meeting, hit silent mode and walk, you know.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, why would you do that? But when you have it, it's cool. It's very un-Apple-y. Like, it's like an extra switch, you know, an extra thing on there. But it's handy.
Look what I can do.
And for $440, it's far less expensive than a Pixel or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pixel was my... I was looking at the Pixel, but... What is it, like $700?
Well, if you get the 128 gig and everything like that, and a year warranty, you could be up to $850, $900.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I'm off contract with, and you can't even get it through through T-Mobile. So, you know, I'm paying for my phones up front to save money on the monthly.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I've been doing that for a while. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I need to do that one of these days. Anyways, so, wow, that's a lot of good information on those phones. I know. It's something it seems like we have to replace all the time. or at least every couple of years, whether you want to or not. Does anybody know, I mean, are there phones that you guys have found that it lasts longer than a couple of years and still work well? Well,
the only reason I had to replace my phone is because I dropped it in water. My OnePlus One was still rocking steady. Okay. It was a great, great phone.
Okay.
And cheaper even. It was only like $350 when I bought it.
Wow. All right. Very good. All right. So I don't really have anything this week. I've been working 14 days straight and it's, not much. So I did send off, I know last week we talked about a quote. I did send off a quote to the construction company and just waiting on a response. And I basically laid it out like John was talking about and said, hey, we need a couple hours to go in and make sure that we've got everything documented well before we basically go in and tear this all apart and rebuild it, which again, it's not that much, but you don't want to shut a business down, even if it's going to be for a day or so. So other than that, everything has been pretty quiet. I did, after last week's show, I did immediately go out and buy PC Doctor, which we have an email about that. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Really? So,
yeah, so at the beginning of the year, generally, January, February timeframe, I usually will buy a couple of tools that I think I might use in my business or at least want to play around with. And that just happened to be one of them because I am looking for something to make sure that I can get a good, solid, hey, this is what's wrong with their hardware, and let the customer know in a short period of time. So I'm hoping that this is going to do it for me. And again, like I said, we've got a couple emails about that and we'll talk about that in a bit. But let's go ahead and take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about our main topic. Our show today brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution to help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have a faster fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools that you use every day. Ninja provides competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email, SMS alerting. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time. You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients alike. Network visibility inside the RMM, easy to read dashboards, which I really like. Ninja is always adding new features like their latest beta release. Powerful new device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show your customers. A new executive style report showing important system metrics such as health score, software added or removed, hardware changes, and TeamViewer connections. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial, and when you decide to buy, a 10% discount. Take advantage of this offer. Go to info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. All right. The main topic for today. The good news is anyone can get into the IT business. The bad news is anyone can get into the IT business. Do you think government should regulate the industry to protect customers? And then how much is too much intervention from an outside entity like the government? Because I'll be honest with you, there is not one service or thing that the government has done in my 46 years of life that I can go, yeah, that worked well. So I'm a little leery, and I understand that there's people on both sides of the fence. A lot of people would like in a regulated industry so that not everybody could come by and rip people off, take advantage of them, be in and out of the business, and make a bad name for ones that are doing it legitimately. So what do you guys think?
I can go first.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Robert.
All right. I think that this discussion parallels the previous discussions about certifications. Right? Because, yes, certifications are, you know, good to have, and they kind of tell, okay, this person was able to study this and can pass this test. But in reality, does it mean that they are a good tech and can they handle the situation that they've been hired to handle? So along that same vein, what does government regulation mean? It probably means that you'll have to get some kind of a certification. And what is that? That we've already discussed. Most of us, I think, are in agreement that certifications are nice, but really don't necessarily, you know, ensure that somebody knows what they're doing. So in the same, you know, I'm not a big government regulatory guy. I think that electricians are already regulated. They have to be contractors. They have to be certified. I think they have to be bonded. And they can burn down buildings. So that's probably appropriate. If you want to run cable, you're technically supposed to be a low voltage certified contractor, at least in the state of California and most states. That, you know, if you're running the wrong kind of cable, you're going into the structural parts of a building. Like I understand that the need for regulation there. Virus removal kind of things or networking are important, but I don't know how effective a regulation would be. I can see both sides of the need for it, but I kind of would rather you be a smart business person and ask the IT person that you're about to hire, you know, like you would do with anything else. Hey, are you a licensed business? Do you have business insurance? References. We talk to some of your other clients. These kinds of things. Don't just hire some guy because he's offering you $30 an hour and you found him on Craigslist, and then expect to get good results, and then say, "Oh, the government needs to fix this problem."
Right. Right?
Yep. Anyway, that's kind of where I come from on this whole topic.
Okay. John.
I'm probably about in the same boat. I probably see some more industry regulation coming with compliance, because we're already getting some government organizations laying down what they would call broad rules for that. NIST has some compliance rules now, which they're basing that government entities need to follow. I could probably see something in the future where you might have to get some sort of, maybe it's not required, but there might be some optional things that you could do, meaning I'm a certified whatever for the healthcare industry or something like that, that I've passed some sort of regulatory. But in my opinion, that would be a way to go. I agree with Bradford that certifications aren't really there, but if we need to do it for the industry and you want to be specialized in something, you know, go ahead and go get a specific, I don't know, piece of paper that says you're good in that particular thing. I think we can all look at industries that are regulated, lawyers, contractors, doctors. There's still just as many good and bad, even though they have a high level of barrier to entry. So, you know, in my opinion, my short answer is that I think it's just would be one more thing for us to have to do as business owners to cross that barrier to entry. And I think the industry also fleshes out those computer IT personnel, which aren't any good. You know, we all talk about the store that opens and closes 6 months later, or the guy that's doing computer work that we don't see. We see once and we never see again. But
yeah, and that's true. But a lot of people are worried because those people that are they're doing a bad job, they come out and they're giving the rest of us a bad name. So they're like, hey, we need to push some sort of regulation. And I agree with you guys. I don't know that what would you put together to regulate this industry that would make sense? Because I can tell you people that have certifications up the wazoo and they basically, they're mediocre at their job at best.
The problem with any certification in the IT industry is, would just be like the certifications that you mentioned, is they can't keep up. I mean, the government, even with regulatory law, can't keep up with how fast the technology moves. So the certification somebody got from the government would be outdated by the time that the passing grade was mailed to them in the mail, because you know the government would mail it, not email it. So so I don't think there would be any way to really regulate the industry because it moves so fast. I kind of like the idea that there's a low barrier to entry. You know, I remember when I started, I didn't even own a computer. And I started doing this sort of thing and got lucky with the first couple of clients I got and got on a roll. But now I just think about all the business we get from bad computer guys, meaning how many times do we inherit a job, you know, at least for me back in the day, from Best Buy or somebody that, hey, I took my computer to Best Buy, I got it back, and now there's nothing on it. Can you help me?
Right.
You know, I had to ask my friends. Or when I take over a client for somebody else, and then we kind of discovered all the things that are wrong and maybe how we can move forward together to create a relationship instead of just a billing relationship. So
Yeah. Well, and to add to what you've kind of already said, the specific aspects of IT that are critical, you know, PCI, credit cards, security, and like medical information, those things are regulated to some extent, at least self-regulated by the industry. And like I know, I believe it's just like everything else with PCI. I think it started in January of this year, but it hasn't really been seen and enforced. But I believe that starting this year, there's a new certification for a PCI audit expert. And more and more, they're going to start enforcing that you have to hire a certified auditor now and have them analyze your network for PCI compliance if you're going to process credit cards. Whereas before, it was sort of up to their spot checking. And, you know, maybe they would do a PCI audit if you had enough volume or if you had triggered some red flags. Now they're going to be more pushing down that you need to hire a guy who has this certification to audit your network. That's the kind of thing that I see, you know, okay, that's valuable. But a general, it's kind of like a general practice practitioner for as a doctor. He doesn't have a specialty. He's more of like the quarterback of your medical care. And then, and that's more kind of where I'm at. And then when we have specific needs, we hire, you know, experts.
Have you guys gone through any of the compliance questionnaires for PCI with your clients and all that kind, or personally for your own?
Only the questionnaires. I've never gone through a full audit. I was working kind of as a consultant in an office when their IT department was going through an audit, and I know they had a heck of a time. They ended up just literally disconnecting the security cameras during the audit because they couldn't figure out how to make them pass the test. I don't remember what the issue was, but they like somehow the pen test could see that there was a security camera system, and that kept flagging the audit. So they just unplugged them, and then passed their audit and plugged them back in. I was like, oh, well, that's one way to do it.
A lot of the compliance questionnaires are like over 100 questions. You know, so every time I do this with a client, I'm always thinking to myself, how's Bob that's running the little gas station taking credit cards down the way getting through this? Because half the questions are written are duplicates, and they'll reverse them so that you kind of, you know, so you're not just checking all yes, because if you check all yes, then the ones that are reversed on the back end would be wrong. Mm-hmm. So they do that. But the interesting thing I saw in the latest one I just did, which kind of got us an almost fail, you know, you could sort of put an explanation in, is they're going to require what's called a FIM. And what a FIM is called file integrity monitoring, so that you might have to have a piece of software on your network or at least on the machines that have anything to do with credit card that monitor file changes, all the files on the entire system to manage all the changes to those files in case you had some sort of integrity breach.
Oh, that could never go wrong.
So, yeah, it's a little bit. You know, it's a little bit ridiculous, in my opinion. I mean, I'm all for a lot of the compliance stuff because I think we've talked about this before, because a lot of the gear that I always thought the business should have, I can now say, well, we need to buy this because you have to do it to be compliant, versus me getting on my knees and saying, can we please do this so you're not, you know, infected every other day as we've been talking. So, right. But you know, a lot of this I see every year when we renew these questionnaires and all that, they just keep adding more and more and more and more. And I think a lot of the questions on there too, Bradford, are just what you said. You know, is a third party doing an audit of the network or penetration testing or stuff like that?
See, I guess my problem too is when we're talking about government and the things that they do, and here's a point, an example. I went to the store, went, bought some stuff, and now I can't even swipe my card anymore, my bank card. I have to actually, because they're all chipped now. The ones, if it has a chip in it, most stores will not let you swipe. I'm used to swiping. It's quick, easy, fast. It takes me 4 times as long to check out because now, talk about going backwards. Now I have to stick my card in the machine and it sits there. Don't take it out. Don't take it out. Don't take it out. And then I've got to put my PIN in. Don't take it out. Don't take it out. Don't take it out. It's like, okay. I'm not going to take it. Okay, you can take it out now. And so when the only reason that was done was basically to move who was responsible if there was fraud. And that was basically moving it from the credit card company to the store. And so when we look at things like that, it's like, okay, was this an idea really to protect people, or was this more of an idea to basically move who was responsible for when that happened, right? And that's my biggest problem, is I look at all these things that they do, and it's so backwards that I just don't know if there's anything that we can do to regulate this industry. I agree with you, John. I think people come in, they go out, they're gone quick. And so it's not really a big deal. Now, when it comes to compliance and things like that, you probably should have some knowledge. And maybe there should be, I mean, some basic knowledge. That is something you should know. Hey, can you have this type of network in this doctor's office? Can you have an open Wi-Fi? What, these are basic things that maybe there's people out there that really don't know. And then both John and Brad, how many places are 100% compliant? Is there any?
I have zero.
Yeah,
no. I have zero.
And see,
I mean, I'm not 100% compliance myself.
Right. So what is it that they're trying to actually accomplish with something like that? They're trying to get better, and I understand that. And John, I agree with you. And part of the problem is when it comes to routers and switches and doing it properly, the number one entity that does it the poorest is the government. And I'm sorry if I've offended anybody out there, but that is the truth. Okay, so you have the weakest link at the top, and yet you're going to push regulation and all these other things down so that everybody else can be compliant. And don't get me wrong. Hey, I remember back in the day when mortgage companies would not even shred their paperwork. So you had your mortgage paper, and they would put it in garbage bags, most of the time clear, and they would go out in a dumpster in the alley. Man, once they found that out, they're like going, hey, look at that. Joe, John, Mary, social security number. I've got all this stuff. But, and that had to change. So I understand some of it, but like Brad said, as far as virus removals, basic networking, different things like that, should you have to have certification? Now, Brad, you live in California, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Anyways, I'm just kidding. I was born there. I'm just kidding. Anyways, so
no
now,
wonder.
Do yeah, exactly. Can you tell? Do you have to have a business license to work in this industry?
Well, if you want to have any, if you want to have any business, you're required to maintain some kind of a business license, at least within the city that you operate. So, I have a business license in my city, but it costs me about $40 a year. Okay. And all they want is a check. They don't even really.
They don't check anything. Care. They're just like, no. Hey, I'm in business. So, I'm a business over here. Okay.
It's a, you know, I don't know. I'm not even sure. I guess the purpose is just to, I do have to register with the county with any fictitious name, which is my business name. Okay. And that's about $18 every 3 years. And they require a physical address. I can't use my PO box for that.
Okay.
So I guess it's really just a registry, you know, like, hey, this person's running a business. He's using this name instead of his own real name. And then you can take that to the bank and get a business checking account. I mean, that's it. So I think I spend less than $50 a year on licensing.
Okay. Right now. And is that
here in Michigan, Jeff, Michigan doesn't only requires a license for some businesses, some
correct.
Types of businesses.
Yes.
And in Grand Rapids, where I am, I don't know about you on the east side, same deal. Only some businesses are required, like ambulances. I'm looking through the list. It's kind of funny. Ambulances, cabs, dance halls, car washes.
Interesting. Dance halls, I can understand.
Medical marijuana, hotel, coin-operated laundries, liquor stores.
Okay.
Live entertainment. So nothing about technology. Pawnbrokers. So.
And when I first started my business, I went and got an LLC right away, which gave me instead of just doing doing business as and using that name so I could basically get a bank account and take money that way. An LLC was $50. That's $25 a year to maintain that. It's not a big deal. But yeah, I looked for licensing in Michigan, and for our industry, you don't need it. So, but I know there's other states, not just California, that require some sort of things, but it's good to know, Brad, that they don't really care what you're doing just as long as you're paying money.
Yeah. They ask, they want to know, like, you have to file that you're, you have a home-based office.
Okay.
That's one thing, you know, but, and they want to know what industry you're in, but the fees are associated with your annual revenue. Okay. I think they really just want a piece of the action. So
that's what,
and they do that to us here in Michigan too now, Jeff, but they do it through the back door because now our tax rate is based on total revenue, not total profit.
Interesting. So, okay. Total revenue. Yeah. And so,
because what I used to do prior to the change was I would bill third party vendors through me, even though I'd like, let's say you did some work for me for a customer.
Right.
All right. You billed me. I would just say, you billed me $100. I might mark it up a little bit, or I might just pass it through depending on the customer, but that would show on my revenue number, right? Drive my revenue number up.
Okay.
So now what I do is I would say, you just bill the customer directly, unless the relationship doesn't do that, because I don't want that number on my bottom line.
Ah, okay. I gotcha.
So,
yeah.
And that's obviously state to state based on the tax rules. So,
well, not only that, and you're talking, what is it, 15% self-employment tax? On top of, I mean, you've got all these different things here that, yeah. Anyways,
I pay somebody to do that.
Exactly. Amen. I'm right there with you. There are just a lot of things that I don't know that there's any good answer for this. And if anybody out there can think of a reason other than the whining and crying and I need more business, go ahead and, you know, send an email in so that we can discuss this more. But I just don't know.
My short answer would be is absolutely not. The last thing we need in any part of my life is
more regulation. Right. I agree.
Just the only thing that I think they need to do is just make sure it's a fair playing field for everybody. Done.
Okay.
I mean, they'll get us in the end somehow, because they always do, but
absolutely.
I don't need more paperwork to fill out, more compliance stuff to do. I don't, you know, they're already sucking the fun out of it enough. Compliance and all that kind of stuff. Ask any doctor, dentist, or orthodontist, all they say, I just want to fix teeth.
Right.
You know, so,
well, a dentist, they would really be sucking the fun out of it. So,
yeah, literally.
Oh, Brad, how about you? Any lasting thoughts on that?
Nope. I can completely just agree with what John said.
Okay.
We've a lot of, like, PCI, most PCI stuff is actually not governmental. It's, you know,
credit card.
The credit card industry has just an association. They come up with these things. And it's self-regulating in that way. And, they're the ones that take the heat if, you know, there's fraud and someone's got to cover it. So, you know, as long as they're kind of, they manage their own risk at that point, and that's perfect.
I know there's a lot of people out there that, and we've talked about this in the past, where they will say, okay, with this whole chip and pin, the credit card has moved over. So if we're taking credit cards in our business, now all of a sudden we're liable if there's any fraud on that credit card. And for most businesses, unless you're taking a big amount, like, you know, you're buying a bunch, that company's buying a bunch of servers and workstations and whatnot, and they're putting it on a credit card, which most companies will write you a check. It's not a big deal. Where in that are we worried about a few hundred dollars here or there as far as fraud when it comes to taking credit cards? And maybe, and you guys probably know more than I do. It's always a question that burns in my mind.
Sure. There's two answers to that. Well, and to go back to what Bradford said about the PCI being industry regulated, the good news is if you ever look at one of those diagrams where they have the circles, and if you were to put like HIPAA, FINRA, PCI compliance, you know, all the compliances together, you could push all those circles together so they're overlapping. The good news is, you know, they share a lot of the same requirements, so that's great. But if I were to look at a lot of the compliance, like HIPAA, you know, the dirty little secret is why the government is doing that is because there was $125 billion in Medicare fraud in 2015. So the reason they're doing that is And that's just Medicare. So what about Medicaid? And then what about all the other insurance companies?
Right.
So if there's just one entity that has $124 billion in fraud, so that's one of the primary reasons they're trying to shut that down and why we have things like HIPAA now, just to make it not so darn easy to steal somebody's records
right.
and financial information. Because, I mean, let's be honest, prior to that, and even now, it's not that hard. So,
and that's the stuff that really should have been, I kind of blame us. And we always say, well, the customer didn't want to pay for this or didn't want to pay for that. But the reality is we really probably should have pushed a little bit harder and said, wait, do you want this stuff getting out? And maybe they didn't even really know with this brand new internet of the things that are out there. And I know a lot of people will complain and say, well, I want to lock my network down and I want to make sure that nothing gets in or out. And I'm like going, okay, that's like a full-time job. Are you willing to do that?
I'm not even thinking about that. I mean, just think of, go back 10 years, well, maybe 5 years for those of us younger in the crowd. How many times you've put your name, address, social security number, and maybe other information on a piece of paper and slid it across to somebody, to a stranger who then walked away with it?
Mm-hmm. I know.
And who knows where that is or what happened to it. And then, I mean, maybe back in the day, it was a great idea to use our social security number for absolutely everything. To identify us, you know, not to mention Social Security, but all your healthcare stuff. If you were in the military, you know, anything, that was the number that identified you for anything, your credit card, everything. So, I mean, that ended up being a really bad idea because if you got a little bit of information personally about somebody, then you could get everything.
John, here's the bad part though. So I've got a medical card for my insurance that has a number on it, correct? Mm-hmm. But now when I go to the doctor to get a checkup or whatever, what do I have to put on that paperwork? Name, address, social security number. And I complain about it every time. You know what they tell me? It's what they need. And so it's going on a physical piece of paper. That yes,
well, there's still a couple of dental companies here in Michigan, like Delta Dental, what is one of the biggest dental insurance companies here. And they still use the social security number.
Absolutely.
So, because their system hasn't changed over. The state of Michigan still uses your social security number for a lot of... I'm going to say welfare, but I don't know if it's the correct term. But a lot of the things you have to, it's, your ID number is still your social security number for a lot of the social programs here in Michigan. The system has never been upgraded. So
thankfully, colleges have stopped doing that.
Yeah. So, I mean,
easy pickings there. Young people
I'm certainly not the smartest guy in the room, and I wouldn't have thought about it back in the day. But I mean, the idea is we want to try to isolate these things. So if somebody could get your dental insurance card, okay, or get your dental record, maybe they won't have your medical record and everything else. I mean, the big deal is I've never had it done, but if you've had your identity stolen just from a financial aspect, I guess that's a pain in the butt.
Right.
But imagine if your medical record gets stolen. There is no entity to change that. There is no. So if somebody goes in there, steals your medical record, then, you know, sets something up and puts a bunch of stuff on your medical record, like you're allergic to this, done this, you've had these drugs, burns through all your insurance money for the year, getting all these fake treatments. There's really nobody to call to say, hey, fix this.
Mm.
I mean, there's little stories on a couple of the podcasts I listened to about HIPAA where like hospitals are charging patients for like having their pancreas removed. And the people show up to the financial office at the hospital and say, look, I don't have a scar. You didn't cut me. And there's still a problem trying to get things resolved.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a mess, but I'm all for the little things we're trying to do. It's not going to get fixed overnight, but I mean, obviously we had to do something. So
I agree in little steps. And like I said, I don't know that the government should be involved. We should be self-governing when it comes to that stuff anyways, but
I agree 100%. But if you think about it, I mean, HIPAA has been around since 2009. How many people have done anything about it until the pressure started in the last year and a half?
Right.
Nobody. So given the chance, nobody did. Well, almost nobody.
Even then, still not 100%.
Right.
Yeah. At least, credit card processing, they have a carrot and a stick.
That's right.
They just shut you down.
If you're not, or they shut you down. That's right.
There you go. Good
point, Bradford.
All right, let's go ahead and move into our call-in portion of the show. We've got some emails also. The call-in number is open, and it's 1-888-697-0162.
What's that number, Jeff?
1-888-697-0162. You know, you asked me just as I cleared off there. Sorry, I don't have my lower third anymore because, I don't know, Google's doesn't want to support it, I guess. Anyways. All right, let's go ahead and go into our first email. This is from Robert Hammett. This show is awesome. I just want to say thank you. I subscribed to your feed about 2 weeks ago and have been working my way through old episodes. These conversations are exactly what I need to hear. I've been running my computer repair side business for just over a year now while working full-time at my job. I'm responsible for every aspect of the business except for accounting. That's good. Most of us probably shouldn't be doing accounting. And go back and forth between loving it and nearly overwhelmed. It's great to know that I'm not alone. And no, Robert, you aren't. Easier Technologies, Spokane, Washington. Robert, thank you for the email. It's great to know that other people are out there. And I definitely appreciate hearing from folks out there that appreciate what we talk about because we try to bring thought-provoking ideas that people can actually use in their business or at least think about it. All right. Email number two. This is from Rod Green. Listening to Podnuts Daily 478, you mentioned having a lot of files on a hard drive. A cool free tool I use is called Everything Search. Very quick at indexing. Search results are instantaneous. And I will put the link for that in the show notes. Looks like it's voidtools.com. VOIDTOOLS.com. But it's called Everything
I have used
Search.
That before.
You have.
It actually is. It's pretty freaky how fast it will, you know, normally when Windows does its indexing, first time you do that,
yes.
And it's,
takes,
you know,
forever.
I don't know why Microsoft just doesn't do with whatever this guy is doing, because it takes like 2 seconds and it will find anything on your hard drive instantly.
No kidding. Okay.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I've seen it and used it. It is pretty fast. Although now that more and more SSDs are becoming prevalent, then it kind of like makes up for the slower indexing that Windows does. But
well, you know, when it comes to SSDs though, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting to the point where I just seem to want it faster. It's not fast enough. Oh no.
You're getting old. You only have so much time left.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like going, I need it now. When I press that button, it better be just boom right there.
So, now, keep in mind, on the Void Tools homepage, if you like this program, there is a little donate button for you guys.
There you go. And like Sean says, and I've said in the past, is that go ahead and support those out there that are making these great tools, because if you don't, they won't be around. And even though it's a labor of love for a lot of people, and we definitely appreciate what people do out there for us, sometimes we don't think about it. Hey, you're making $60, $70, $80 an hour, $100 an hour, whatever it is, and you can afford to throw a few bucks their way just to say, hey, I appreciate what you're doing.
I'm sure David Carpenter's listening. So, David, nice program.
Yeah, very
thank
cool.
You.
Awesome. Got his name mentioned on the show and everything. All right. So, let's go. Let's see. We've got... Hello, all at the Podnuts. On show number 218, you had an email about or email asking about PC Doctor, and I've been using it for about 3 to 4 years. The nice thing about it is you can run from a boot CD or USB and run the test that way or from Windows. They also do offer a discount for updating. When you run it in either boot or Windows, it takes about 15 to 20 minutes. That's quick. That's well worth it. I run it on every system before I do any work on a computer. All I can say, or as you say, test the hardware first. That will save you from going nuts later. You can get information about the computer without trying to find it or run another program to get that information, like the normal stuff, model number, serial number, hard drive info, and then you get deeper information like the cache of the CPU and memory address and so on. You can also save the report. You can take it and print it off from your computer or put it in your ticketing system like Repair Shopper. The Android part only runs on Android version 5 or higher, I think. In this Robert's Computer Service, LLC, Robert Eiler. Spartanburg, South Carolina. All right. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate the feedback on that. That's nice to know that somebody's been using it for 3 to 4 years. I picked it up last week. There is in last week's episode, there was a, I think it was last week's episode, there was a discount code of 20% off, which I used. So I got the $400-some-odd version for $359. And I just decided
that code
to
still work.
It should. It worked last week.
Do you remember what the code was?
I don't, but it will be in the show notes. So we'll definitely put that out there. But yeah, definitely check that out. I think it's going to be well worth it. I want to do a testing on a couple of systems I have here, and we'll see what it does for me.
Right. Yeah, I'd be interested to see that because I've been just doing the kind of like you follow a logic tree of what's working, what's not working as you're trying to do a hardware diagnostic, but it's nice to have something to kind of just tell right. you.
Exactly. Or you know, Brad, you might as well just turn your head towards your screen and just back and forth hitting your head on that screen. Why am I doing this?
Yeah, I've got a machine over there that I don't want to look at right now, but it's not booting up and I'm not sure what it is.
Have you tried turning it off and on again?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, it'll be an interesting, I've got a motherboard coming back that was in my original production machine and Asus is sending it back to me. I don't know if they fixed it. They didn't really put anything in the notes. I don't know what they're giving me back. Is it a refurbished board? I'll find out when I get it. But it was one of those weird issues where you started having, I had a slow boot from day one and 8 months later it came to a halt where it would just hang and hang on the booting process. And even it would hang with no hard drive or anything attached to it. So it was kind of like, something's not right. But we'll see what comes back.
Nice if they sent you a version 2 board.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it? Then I have a backup. Oh, all right. So here is our third email. It says, folks, can you recommend a tool for remote desktop use? Specific things I need for a remote desktop tool, Mac and Windows compatible, unattended access, secure connection encrypted over the internet, the ability to disable the remote controlled Mac or PC display for privacy, cost free or under $30. Thanks, Charles. By the way, I've tried TeamViewer and it locks up, freezes, and stops functioning when I connect from my home PC to my work Mac. It also doesn't give the option to black screen on the remote Mac. Now, everything I was familiar with, except for the ability to black out the screen. Do you guys ever do that?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a reason?
Occasionally.
More often than not, I don't blank the screen. I have the option to, I use Screen Connect. Okay. I can lock their keyboard or I can blank their screen or both. So,
now the locking keyboard, I would use.
Yeah.
Do it all the time.
Okay.
Either people will be like, they'll have something sitting on their keyboard, like they're working on some papers and it's pressing a key. That'll happen. Or sometimes they'll call and ask for help and then not let me get into their computer. And they like, or the owner has asked me to fix something on the, and then the person that's sitting at the computer is still like trying to shake off the mouse and like not let me do what I need to do. So I put them on a timeout and I lock their keyboard. Blanking the screen, I do it sometimes, I guess.
Okay.
Every once in a while. But more, it's scary because if they think that the computer just shut down or froze, then they might hit the power button. So I use blanking the screen pretty judiciously for that reason.
That's a good idea. Okay. That's something I didn't think about, but I can understand the need for that. Listen, stop looking at me. Stop looking at the screen. Stop it.
Trade secrets here. You can't see what I'm doing.
Exactly. Let me reach through the screen and take my ruler and wrap your knuckles.
Well, did we actually give him?
No, we're going to do that now. But before we do that, the PC Doctor Save 20% PCDKS20. 20% off that.
PCDKS20.
You got it. So definitely use that code and try it out. I think they have it. I'm not, I, because I didn't care, but I'm not going to return it. But I think they do have a 30-day money-back guarantee is what I was told. So.
I'm just really interested to see what you'll do with the Android side of the thing, just to see if it does anything.
I don't do anything with phones now, John.
Don't you have your old phone that wasn't working right, though?
Yeah, that's true. Okay. All right, you got me there.
Play with it, just to see if it would pick up anything on there. Okay. I'm just curious.
I will do
and
that.
And now that you have it, I don't have to spend the time doing it.
There
so
you go.
That works for me.
Hey, John does a lot of testing on stuff. He does testing all the time. If I need any piece of information, I can usually get it from John. All right. So going back to, so Brad, you said Screen Connect. What are the things you, does it cover this list, cost, and what are the things you like about it?
Okay. So the problem with recommending Screen Connect is
what?
That.
I just heard a big
I bought Screen Connect. It's a self-hosted license. It was $300 for a single user. I host that on my own server, and I don't pay a monthly fee. And then occasionally, I'm supposed to buy updates, right?
Okay.
But I don't have to. They don't offer that anymore unless you buy 10 licenses. So. And I imagine they're just trying to phase it out because they have a monthly plan now. It's like $50 a month, just like everybody else.
Okay.
So I'm kind of glad that I locked that down when I did, because I'm still allowed to buy more licenses for myself. But if you don't already have a server, then you can't just buy one license anymore. So it doesn't cover the cost of what he's trying to accomplish. I've noticed TeamViewer locking up a lot too, because I have a couple customers that just every once in a while need to jump into like another computer in their own organization, and they don't have log me in or anything on their own, and they don't want to use remote desktop. So they'll use TeamViewer, and I've noticed it freezing. So I can agree with him what he said there. I don't have a solution that covers the $30.
Okay.
I think everything is around $50 a month now. Maybe at volume, the log me in might cover that, but not.
No.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, you're talking about the cream of the crop right there.
I haven't looked at their pricing for a while.
It's tremendous. Right, John?
It is tremendous. That would be a good word for that. Yes. I have some options that I've checked out.
Go ahead.
I won't throw my full weight behind any one of these, but here, and all of these links will be in the show notes that I provide to you, Jeff.
Okay.
And I think all of these will do what he's asking for, but obviously he should check them out and do a trial on each of them. And some of these do meet his price point, especially this first one, which is called Desk Roll. It has a flat fee for per year for unlimited computers. So that is very nice. Another one is called AnyDesk, which he could look at. He could look at, obviously, our friends over at Instant House Call if he hasn't, because I know that is both Mac and Windows.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Product called ISL Online does exactly what he's looking for. Remote Utilities at remoteutilities.com has a product that does what he's looking for. Go Support Now, which is probably the least, as part of, let me combine that with R-Hub. Remote Support Now is just like Log Me In or TeamViewer like that, but it's from a company called R-Hub, which R-Hub actually makes an appliance. So it kind of looks like a switch or something. You put it in your own office, you self-hosted, so you have a one-time price, and then you can have unlimited endpoints. So that's kind of nice. And I know Marvin uses one of those.
Right, he's got one.
And obviously there's Log Me In. I didn't mention any of the GoToAssist or any of those products. I'm not a huge fan of those, but I have tried all of these and I know they at least all work. I don't particularly use any of them. Those were just in the list of products that I looked at when I was going through what I use. Right now I use Log Me In Central Premier.
Okay.
Which is not in the $30 range.
No, and the other thing, so with it, things like Instant House Call is the Uno edition is $29. And I think you can have 50 unattended and there's some other things in there. But the nice thing about it is if you want an all-in-one solution, you can also, they have a tool that's built in where you can do repairs on a remote session. you can, if you have things like the tech suite from the guys over at Repair Tech Solutions, they will basically, if you buy their license, you can integrate it with Instant House Call, which is kind of nice. It makes it all one easy click and you're up and running. Whereas I would have to take my file and actually move it over to the remote computer. I don't have to do that now. Everything is instantaneous. So any way you want to go, but yeah, definitely. I always recommend everybody, there are free trials. You can try Instant House Call free, use the code PODNUTS, and you can get a free trial on that. I think it's 15-day. Try them out. See what works for you. I am always a, there's a lot of people out there that will tell you there is, this is the best program out there. And to that I say, there's not. There are programs that you, or will work for you. And that's what you should be using. Because there are certain programs that I understand, I wrap my head around it. I get how they're trying to do things. And so there's not a big learning curve. Some programs, man, you got it. There is a huge learning curve. Things as far as like TeamViewer and stuff like that. I haven't had any problems with TeamViewer, but you're going to get these things where you're going to get an update. You're going to get an iteration that is going to basically break the system. It's not if, or it's not when, or wait, yeah, it's not if, it's when. It will happen. It's just the way it is. Again, I will say this again, software's hard. So all you Monday night quarterbacks that sit on your couch and ain't played in years, stop trying to sit there and play by play. It's not that easy. And I know we want everything all wrapped up in a nice bow and handed to us on a golden platter, but get off your high horse and just understand that things are not going to work 100% all the time. And that's why we're here. That's what we do.
I've never used any of those remote access software that's worked for me all the time. Like I said, I use LogMeIn now, which I would consider probably supposed to be one of the Cadillacs, and I have problems with it all the time.
Yep.
So
one of the things that I always tell people is that one of my pet peeves is I cannot stand when a person comes up to a job, and this is in my daytime job, and says, they look at it and they go, I don't know. I ain't been trained on that. And I'm just looking at him like going, it's what we do. We fix things. I don't care what it is. It can be fixed. Might take me a little bit longer, but it can be fixed. So you know.
I tell my kids, they're like, can you fix it? I said, hey, with enough time and money, anything can be fixed.
Absolutely. I tell them, I said, hey, calm down. Listen. The impossible is just going to take a little bit longer. That's all. Don't worry about it. Oh, all right. So hopefully, Charles, that helps you out. And hopefully you can, yeah, just go out and try them and see what works for you.
And like I said, Charles, I'll put that list that I rattled off in the show notes for Jeff. So that'll be there.
Awesome. Very cool. All right, so let's go ahead. Here's another email, and this one's going to be a little more long-winded and kind of a subject maybe we can go into on this show since we've got plenty of time left. Remember, you can still call in, and that call-in number is 1-888-697-0162, and be part of the conversation. All right, so this email here says, hi, Jeff. I'm really struggling with network and firewall security. Been listening for several months now. Love your show. Thank you. I have many customers that have outdated routers and firewalls. Don't we all? For a small 5 to 20 user office, I hate plugging in a router and crossing my fingers that everything will be secure. Yeah, it's not usually that way, especially if you're buying a $50 box off a shelf. To recommend a $1,400 Sonic Wall 3-year solution to a customer I only see a few times a year, and I admit I do not currently have the time or expertise to remote in daily or weekly and monitor for problems. This is just an expensive solution where I'm still just crossing my fingers. Yeah, you have to learn that stuff. If you're going to use Sonic Wall, WatchGuard, you definitely have to learn those like the back of your hand. Are there any cost-effective, proactive firewall and or LAN monitoring solutions? for resellers or non-firewall gurus. Or perhaps an effective lower-cost firewall I could standardize, specialize on, and learn to remote monitor. I am open to any suggestions. After many months, I am Googled out on this one. Thanks, Rick. No problem, Rick. And thanks for the email. So, John, I know you have a solution. Hit me with your best shot.
I apologize. I thought I was muted.
What do you got? I know
I am not using them anymore because I moved over to a different product, but I didn't move because I didn't like them. I just needed something a little bit more robust for the size offices I was dealing with. So for a small office, I was using a small business router from Arachnus, but I've also used this product with a small business router from Cisco, and that's it, Arachnus or Cisco. Basically, you just need to be able to set up a gateway-to-gateway VPN on the equipment that you're going to use for this. But the product is called My Digital Shield. I think a few of us have ran into them before at some of the conferences that we've been to. But the great thing about that is with My Digital Shield, it's almost like putting in a full UTM device, but you don't have to manage it. For the monthly fee, My Digital Shield does everything. They have equipment you can buy too, which is very cost-effective. So basically, they provide the router for you, and then everything is automatic. You don't have to worry about setting up the VPN. But they monitor the back end. So everything that you said you wanted to log in to look out to see if everything was good, you don't have to worry about it. They'll just notify you if there's a problem, and they'll take care of blocking everything. So a couple of the cool things they do is they deal with the PCI compliance. They deal with the HIPAA compliance. They also will provide you, I think if you're using their product, your client will get a, I forget how much it is, but some cybersecurity insurance. So if there is a breach, you know, they say they'll pay this much of money as long as you were using them correctly, that sort of thing. So it's just My Digital Shield. And I will put that in the show notes as well.
Great.
But that's the best thing I found for a small office that doesn't have a pro to do it for them.
Right. Brad?
If you want to get a real system in place, there's going to be a steep learning curve regardless, like you said. And they're all a little different. The way SonicWall approaches their setup is completely different than, you know, how anyone else does it. So they're all, you just kind of have to pick one if you're going to go that road. I do kind of like the idea of outsourcing it. So I'm actually going to take a look at My Digital Shield. A lot of my smaller office clients that I've have had mostly in the past would be opposed to paying a monthly fee for a router. So that's why I haven't really gotten into that. But I'm kind of migrating into clients that are taking, you know, sort of as I find a client takes their PC infrastructure and their network and their security more seriously, I tend to pay more attention to them and maintain that customer and start migrating away from the clients that, you know, I just can't help because they don't prioritize the things that ultimately become my fault later. So,
God, that's true.
Yeah. I had a customer call me heated. I mean, he was livid because they were having a big day. It was like their anniversary, I believe. And the POS system that I think I've even mentioned this on this show, you know, they were down. Their POS system went down. And he called me just livid. And he's like, what do we need to do to not have this happen every time we're like busy? I said, you need to buy yourself a point of sale system that doesn't suck. I mean, ooh. I was like, because he called me on a Sunday and it was like, you know, launched right into me. And I just went back at him, right? And he was like, oh, right. And then he immediately went. But anyway. Security's rough on a really small office if you're not going to monitor it. You kind of just need to get, you either need to go like, hey, you know what? Here is a decent business class TP-Link/Cisco, whatever, and just kind of do it. You're not going to get any UTM stuff, but at least you've got somewhat of a firewall and some controls. I don't know really beyond that. You definitely want to kind of got to pick. You're going to get a managed solution, maybe pay monthly. Do a real firewall system and learn it and support it and get your clients to pay for it because they are expensive. Or plug and pray with a you know a small business type router, because most of those don't have a whole lot of security features built into them.
Right.
But
now,
the way I kind of look at it, the way to get around that is what I did, Brad, and I don't know why I had success with this, but I really reduced the upfront cost to get them into a UTM device. Sometimes I even provided it for free, and then I sold it on the back end saying, yes, we're paying a monthly, but look, we're always updated, we're always protected, we're always this. Plus, every 3 years, we'll get a brand new piece of gear for zero. So you never have to outlay any. So that's kind of why I wrapped it all together, which got around that initial, you know, well, I got to spend $600 to, you know, $1,600, depending on the size of the office, to get this UTM device or this device. Or, you know, for a small office, it might even just be $200, depending on what you're going to do. But the nice thing about it is you can get, with My Digital Shield, you can get a device for about $100. So, or if you get a customer to sign up for 6, 12, or 24 months, if they prepay, they'll get the device for free. So a lot of the times what I might do is say, well, what's sign up for 24 months? You prepay, we'll get free hardware, and then wrap a little money in there and say, and guess what? In 2 years, we'll get a brand new device for free again, or something like that.
Right.
So that's the way I've been kind of trying to bundle and sell it. Because I think in the end, like I tend to say, if our job gets easier, it's better for the client even.
Yeah. So. And if you are having a hard time selling, if the company takes credit cards or is in a regulated medical field or whatever, you can highlight the benefits of the security and that they will pass their PCI audits and they won't get fined when their network is breached because there's a real security device. There's a small retail shop that just didn't want to spend a dime on their computer systems of any kind. And then one of their friends that also owns a retail store got nailed because they had a lot of fraud going on there and they paid a lot in fines to the credit card company. And then they were like, oh, okay. So we're not spending money on our security. We could end up spending like 10 times as much in fees or, you know, lost revenue because of a breach. And then all of a sudden now the budget magically appeared.
Well, it's just like selling backup. It's really easy to sell up a backup solution after they lose a ton of data.
Not always, John. Not always. how many people?
Don't be the Debbie Downer, Jeff. Listen.
What do they say? You have a better chance of getting struck by lightning twice than winning the lottery. Yet people spend a lot of money on the lottery. So I think the mindset out there when it comes to backups is, well, okay, it got me once. What are the chances it will ever happen to me again? It's a pretty good chance, actually, because electronics fail, period.
And it's tough to sell the intangible, you know, the security.
So that goes back to an interesting topic. We're forced to buy automobile insurance, correct? Well,
yes.
I shouldn't say that. John, most of us are forced to buy auto insurance in the state of Michigan, right?
By law, you're supposed to have auto insurance.
Do you know anybody in jail that it doesn't pay their automobile insurance? I know zero. Just saying.
Wow, you were just a Debbie Downer today.
I'm telling you.
Although,
just
in California, the insurance that you have, the minimum required really just covers like damage you cause to others.
Same here.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. Exactly.
It's a good analogy, but if one of my customers is an insurance company, they've actually come back to me with that. They're like, yeah, but backup is like us insuring ourselves. But in the state of California, you're not required to insure yourself. You have to insure other people that you could damage. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You just totally blew my whole thing away.
But if the thing fails, it doesn't matter. If your data is lost, what are you going to do tomorrow? Can you operate? And if you can, you go back to pen and paper, then that's fine. Well, Brad, if people wanted to find out more about you, where could they go?
They could go to ttcscomputerservices.com if they want to look at get a hold of us through our website. I am on Google+ as Bradford Torrey. And I kind of exist there. I think I probably interact with people more than I actually post, but Yeah.
Good.
Hit me up at either of those places.
All right. Awesome. And John, where can people find you?
Mavengroup.net.
Awesome, man. All right. Come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. Send your questions and feedback to podnuts@podnuts.com, and we will read it on the show. Leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. To support this show, you can go to patreon.com/Computer Repair Podcast, and we would definitely appreciate it. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.